never checked luggage.
What?
This was not the worst news story of the week, by far. But it caught my eye because I always fly Southwest. And the reason I always fly Southwest is that I'm terrible at packing. And I love to check my bags. I love handing them over as soon as I arrive at the airport. I'm sailing through security to my gate with nothing but a tote bag over my shoulder. I love buying a giant airport coffee and bringing it with me on the plane, watching people struggle to maneuver their bags down the aisle, heave them overhead, and try to squeeze them into the overhead bins. I sit there smugly sipping my overpriced coffee, feeling sorry for them, not thinking at all about my two suitcases being loaded into the belly of the plane, bursting at the seams, both just under the 50-pound weight limit. Recently, I went to Los Angeles for a month to write, and I tried very hard not to overpack. I brought the bare minimum of clothing I thought I would need, not characteristic of me at all. In fact, I didn't bring enough to wear. I had to borrow from friends there when there was a cold snap and when I had a surprise meeting in a fancy Beverly Hills office. I still brought two heavy suitcases, though. Check for free. Thanks for the memories, Southwest. One of them was full of old journals and books I thought I might need to reference while I was writing. When I got there, I took them out of my suitcase, arranged them on a shelf in my room, and never touched them again the entire time I was there. Mm-hmm. Not once. People have asked me why I went to LA. Why couldn't I just write at home? The truth is, I could have written at home. I do it all the time. But my best writing, maybe not my best, but the hardest writing I've done, I've always done away from home. Something about being in another environment, being physically removed from my usual surroundings, obligations, and distractions frees my mind in a way that helps the words to flow. I wrote this sermon at home. Airplanes are my favorite places to write, probably because I'm captive in my seat, bags checked, forced focus. While I was in LA, I did write more than I would have written at home. I wrote hard. And I thought a lot about why I was able to do it, because I knew that when I got home, I was going to need to sustain that level of concentration, that output. I needed to increase it even. So when I got home, I looked at my apartment with fresh eyes. What was it about being at home that made my brain feel sluggish and my fingers move more slowly over my keyboard? Why was it so hard to stop scrolling on my phone, sit my butt in the chair, and work? Some of it is my stuff. Yes, I'm gearing up to unload a lot of things on my local Buy Nothing group, the only reason I'm still on Facebook these days. Clearing out my apartment, rearranging the furniture, shaking up my space, I think it will help. But it's not just my material possessions that are dragging me down and zapping my energy. After being away, I saw my life through a different lens. Work commitments that are no longer in alignment with my goals. Relationships that make me feel ways I don't want to feel. Confused, misunderstood, defensive, frustrated. Who could I be if I let go of these things? Could I be maybe a little bit closer to God? A little bit closer to the person she created me to be? The villager in Anthony DeMello's story didn't want the sannyasi's diamond, and he didn't want his wealth either. What he wanted was freedom. The freedom to relinquish what we have is a truer wealth than any possession. The villager wanted the freedom to open his hands and give away something that the world says is valuable, but which isn't in fact valuable at all. It's only worth something because we say it is. Money is made up. The value of a diamond is made up. The sannyasi knew that. That's why he could give it away. The thing is, money may be made up, but it can buy us freedom. Freedom to travel, freedom to live where we want and how we want. Freedom from anxiety about how we'll pay our bills, put food on the table, care for our loved ones. Freedom to access medical care without worrying whether an insurance company will deem a procedure necessary or not. Or surprise us with a $300 bill for alcohol swabs after a hospital stay, which is a real thing. I'll send you my source. In the future, I'll have to pay for the freedom to check my luggage on a flight and sit comfortably with my coffee while other people wrestle luggage into overhead bins. In tonight's passage from the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus tells us to get rid of our worldly belongings. Sell your possessions, he says. Make purses for yourselves that do not wear out, where no thief comes and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. He tells us not to worry about what we're going to wear or what we're going to eat. Do not be afraid, little flock. I love this passage. I find it so comforting. But I confess, I don't really know how to apply it to my life. We need money to live, and we need some things to live comfortably. Clothes to put on our bodies, beds to lie down on at night, a yoga mat, a coffee maker. In his book, Father James Martin quotes St. Thomas Aquinas as saying, "Possession of a few goods is important for a well-ordered life. But how many is a few?" Maybe the better question is, what are our money and our possessions doing for us? Are they helping us to be free, or are they weighing us down? At what point do our belongings become baggage that we have to pay to store in the bottom of the airplane or wedge into a crowded overhead bin? When we let go of things we're holding on to, when we open our hands, we're free to use them for other things, to build, to create, to hold our neighbor's hand. But it is not easy to let go. I still want to know that I have two suitcases in the baggage hold underneath me. When Southwest wasn't charging me anything to check two bags, when it was free, I didn't think too much about overpacking. But was it really free to haul all that stuff with me? I'll leave you with a final story. Many years ago, my mom and stepdad's house burned down. It was devastating, heartbreaking. But I thought I remembered her saying afterward that there was actually a little bit of relief in having so much cleared away. A terrible, traumatic way to declutter, but still, the decluttering was done. I asked her about it yesterday, wanted to get it right. And she said, while the fire was a huge, disorienting loss, it definitely simplified our lives in some ways. She said their move across the country the next year when my stepdad retired was easier because we had less stuff. When my grandpa's longtime best friend, Chuck, a very wise man in his late 80s by then, heard about the fire, he said, "If I'd known you were having a fire, I would have sent you some stuff." My mom said they laughed about that. Here's what she texted me. "A little humor is sometimes good, and most people can relate to that. Lots of us have stuff we really don't know what to do with, and it would be a blessing if it disappeared." My question this Lent to you and to myself is this. Is there something that would be a blessing if it disappeared from your life? If you have to pay extra to check your suitcase, do you still want to bring it with you? Who would you be without it? Can you let go of it?